Be opening in your Bibles, the book of Psalm, chapter 15. Psalm 15, we'll begin there in just a moment. It's good to be with you this morning. Psalm chapter 15, beginning in verse 1. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? Who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart? He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. He does not put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shaken. We've talked about this passage a couple times before on lessons specifically dealing with this particular psalm. What kind of man is David talking about? But today I want to approach it from a different perspective. It's not really an anchor text, more as it is a jumping off point for us. I want to ask, what kind of relationship do you want to have with God? You know, relationships are big things. We talked in Bible class about probably, other than our relationship with God, the most important relationship that any of us have in our lives, the relationship we have with our spouse. Today is Mother's Day. That's a really important relationship. Lauren's already reminded me twice, do not forget to call your mother today or send her post, something on Facebook that says you remember her, because you want to sustain that relationship, to say thank you for that, right? But above all the other relationships that we can have, the one that we have with God is absolutely the defining relationship we have in our lives. And so this morning we're going to do two lessons, one this morning, one this evening, on the kinds of things that this morning hinder us or hinder others who would hear the gospel from coming to Jesus and building a relationship with God. And tonight we're going to talk about how to overcome those things. But if you were to survey even those who profess to be Christians in our country, I would dare say that most of them, most people, even self-professed Christians, do not stop and think about what it means to actually build a relationship with God. For most people, when they think about how God relates to their day-to-day life, He is something that is confined to moments of prayer, moments where they are fearful or in need of encouragement, perhaps if they are of the disposition to do so, maybe even for some regularly weekly worship. But if that is the extent of our connection with God, and the rest of our life is about our physical presence on this blue ball upon which we live, incidentally, that He created, then that is more of a casual acquaintance with God than it is than I would say it would be the defining relationship of our life. Now, this was, even a few years ago, not the case. Most people that I grew up with, and granted, I grew up in a different area of the country, the church was the nucleus of what they did. Their closest friends, God's people. Why? Because they're connected to God. Their spouse, God's people. Why? Because they're connected to God. Raising their children to be God's people. Why? Because I want them connected to God. But more and more, we seem to become people with minds of flesh rather than hearts and minds that are set on the Spirit. And that's why we started in Psalm 15 with that question. Who can really dwell in the presence of God? Now, David gives a very structured answer there. He went back to the law and he pointed out all of the things that God would expect of a person who was a law-abiding, law-keeping follower. And incidentally, the name he uses for God in the 15th Psalm is Yahweh. It's Jehovah. So someone that has a real relationship, a deep connection with God. They're not just going through the motions of keeping the law. They are a law-keeping, a Sinai-keeping people. Sinai covenant-keeping people. Because they want to be connected to God. Not just because it's part of their Abrahamic lineage. He starts out by saying, God, who can dwell in your presence? I'd like to live on your holy hill. I'd like to live in your tent. David obviously can't live in the tent of God because he's not of the tribe of Levi. He can't even go into the deepest parts of the tent of God. But David says, well, what kind of person does God really want? And then he begins to speak of the desires of those people. But you know, Paul says something similar in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, if you will, verse 18. Here the Apostle Paul is writing to Corinth, and one of the things he does with the Corinthians is he sort of jumps right into the middle, right from the very first introduction of some of the issues that he's trying to set right there. Why they are quarreling with one another and fighting with one another, and why they are denominating themselves by who converted them or who baptized them. And he says in verse 18, for the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. They're debating using worldly tactics. They're separating and dividing because they want to lord it over each other and esteem themselves better. Look at what he says in verse 20. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where's the debater of the age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Well, how did God do that? Verse 21. For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. He says, the world keeps looking for one type of message from God. He says, God already sent them the message. He sent them the message in Jesus. He says, they just didn't realize it because it didn't come in the form and the package that they were expecting. It didn't meet their standards of wisdom. It didn't meet their desire for what they were really looking for. In fact, they disregarded it. They called it foolishness. For indeed, verse 22, the Jews seek a sign, and the Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, to the Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For consider your calling, brethren. Here's the big stumbling block to why people struggle today to build this relationship with God. Because it starts with embracing something that our world says is foolish. You ready for what he says next? For considering your calling, brethren, there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised, God has chosen the things that are not, so that he may nullify the things that are, so that no man may boast before God. But by his doing, you are in Jesus Christ, who became to us the wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. So that just as it is written, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord. I know there are a number of denominations that like to emphasize the word, God chose this and not this. God chose this and not this. I want you to understand what Paul just said God chose there. It wasn't any specific individual. It wasn't any specific race of individual. It was a person who would set aside their pride, their arrogance, their appeal to worldly wisdom and to be glorified and gratified in this world. And those who would see what he was doing, even though the message of God coming in the form of a man and dying on the cross seems foolish, why would God ever do that? contrite, then they would humble themselves and be contrite before that message, and then it would change them. That's who God chose. And honestly, we could launch out from that point and teach a message about biblical predestination. Who'd God choose? He chose those that would humble themselves before a message that doesn't appeal, that doesn't glorify us and make us look stronger or mightier or wiser. That doesn't make us richer according to this world's standards, but causes us to embrace a standard of humility that exceeds any of us would take on without that example. That's who God chose. That's who God's looking for. That's who the message of the cross will appeal to. And I've got to say, I've seen this in my own life. As you start interacting with more and more people and you try to evangelize, you start interacting with more and more people. That's our push for this year is evangelism. You start teaching more and more people. You start trying to reach out and open those doors. You start trying to put out even things like the podcasts and the videos and the things that we do. You start trying to open those doors, and often the first people to walk through them are people that want to kick you in the teeth and tell you how stupid what you believe is. That's okay. That's just being blind by the same spirit of the world that once blinded all of us. But we need to realize that